take different movies every week and debate slash rate them. My name is Callum Altimus. I am one of your hosts, and joining me looking dapper for a special episode is Mr. Nathan Sackle-Hannah, all suited and booted. For the second time on the show now, I think you've worn that.
Well, you know, you got to, when the occasion calls for it. When was the last time? Oh, New Year. Was it New Year's?
I can't remember. Might have been.
I feel like it would have been New Year's Eve.
Yeah, maybe. It was somewhere like that. How are you?
Not too bad. I think we're both tired for very different reasons. You're tired because you went out and got pissed. I'm tired because I stayed in and played video games.
What are you playing?
Currently between Helldivers 2, which is fucking amazing, and the new Final Fantasy, because I'm a giant nerd.
You can see, like, I have not a fucking clue about either of those games.
No,
I've been playing video games this week, though.
Not a wrestling game, is it?
No, I'm not. I don't usually play video games too often. Like, I'll play like one of my sports ones every once in a while. But I've been playing the WWE game this week because I got to play that a week early, which was really fucking awesome. I felt so privileged. And the issue was, I got given it last Friday, and it was like, oh, we'll play it and then we'll have the review for Monday. And then I was that busy, I went away for a weekend. So it got to Sunday and I had work at 8 a.m. on Monday, but it got to Sunday night and it was like 2 a.m. and I was still trying different features and then writing about it. I was like, it was fucking hard work in the end, but it was worth it. So I played that game. So I've been a gamer this week as well. That's two gamers here.
Yep, definitely on the same level.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a special episode this week, as the day this releases is the Academy Awards, the 96th Academy Awards Day, Sunday, March the 10th. And we decided we wanted to do an episode kind of themed around the Oscars, but taking it down a different route, because obviously you've got your very traditional awards that are going to be handed out at the ceremony, your best actor, your best picture, and it covers a lot of the best films of the year, but there were a lot of films that kind of miss out as well. So we've decided to do our own awards, the Cinematch Podcast Alternative Oscar Awards. I'm not sure if that name will stick. It's a big mouthful.
Do we manage to book some celebrity guests to announce the awards now?
Yeah, just me. I've got a Google author page now. I count.
That's true.
So we've got our own awards. Should we run through them first, do you think, or just announce them as we announce the winners?
Yeah, whichever you feel best with.
I don't know.
Well, this makes for heavy entertainment.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's sit down. What are you saying?
Let's go through them like we normally do, and then you said, let's say them all now.
We'll go through them as we normally do, then. That's better.
We could never be more in sync than normal.
I know, yeah. We'll go through them as we get to them then. It's a special episode. It's the last one for a while as we're taking a break to get life in order and stop being busy all the time. And then we'll be back soon, but yeah, so we're going out with a bang. We're going out with the Oscars, but our own alternative awards, so we might as well get straight into it then.
Did you pick films that are already kind of like big Oscar names, or did you try and, because I tried to like pick films that you wouldn't typically see at the Oscars?
See, some of them I did, but some of them I thought, that's one of my favorite performances in that category, so I want to talk about it. It's people that for the most part I don't think are going to win Oscars.
Yeah. That's fair.
Also,
there's a massive difference is that you watch all the Oscars films and I'm sat here watching Godzilla.
Yeah, I tell you, I think, because the Oscars is tomorrow night, just to let you guys know, we're recording a day early. I'm trying to watch all the Best Picture nominees before it gets to it, and I've still got two left. I still need to watch that Poor Things, which I think I need to prioritise, because obviously that's been nominated in a lot of categories as well. Like Emma Stone's been nominated for Best Actress. So I want to watch that first. And then that Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
They're the only two I need to watch now. I've watched 8 of the 10.
Do you have time to do it?
Well, unless I put it on in the background whilst I work, then no. I might just have to put it on and then occasionally glance up. That's how movies were meant to be watched, I think.
On an Apple iPod, original Apple iPod, on a train with shitty headphones. That's how you should watch films.
Speaking of which, obviously I go on holiday next weekend. I'm going to Florida for a few weeks. Oh, and they've just
bring me back from Star Wars Land.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you say so. That reminds me, I've still got your Christmas present here.
Oh, well, thanks.
It's somewhere. I'm just remembering because it took ages to get here, didn't it? I remember. And I don't think I've seen that often since, but it's somewhere in here.
No, I don't really think I've seen you, other than on a Monday night on a Zoom call for ages.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's around, I think. So maybe I'll get that to you before I go. Who knows? But yeah.
Or bring it, or just give it when you come down. I bought this when I was at Disney.
Yeah, I could have done
that. I don't know if it's Disney themed, but whatever.
I could have done that, actually. I could have got away with that. You probably forgot that there was a Christmas present anyway. Anyway, back to what I was saying. They've just announced what movies they're going to be showing on the plane to Florida. And my whole plan was, I'm going to get on this plane because it's a 10-hour flight and I'm just going to do uni work and I was going to smash through my uni work. But I've seen some of these films now, I'm like, I could probably spare a couple hours here and there. Because it's like all the big stuff like Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, Ferrari, they've got all of that. But then they've got stuff like Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase from when I was a kid. It's like, they're fucking cool.
I could just imagine rows of people watching these dead, like, important movies and you're just sat there watching Scooby-Doo and Cyber Chase.
Well, I told my brother and he was like, we're going to have to sit next to each other and watch that then. Because that one when we were kids, we watched that, we played the video game on PlayStation once. So I was like, yeah, we need to watch that. Amazing. So yeah, there's a lot of films on there, which is completely off track to what we were trying to say. But I'm going to be watching more. At the moment, it's just some of these shit horror movies. Oh, my God. And I love horror. And I find it entertaining watching them because it's horror and I can watch the worst horror and still be entertained, but they are fucking garbage. They are garbage. And it's so funny, I put one on Letterboxd the other day and I was like, it's fucking dreadful, so bad. I think Dan Comet, he was like, add that to watch this. And I was like, what's wrong with you?
Me and him were going through his Letterboxd and I was just naming all, like, reading out all the names of the ones that sound really, really, like, fucking shocking. And he was like, oh, that was really good. The worst. Yeah,
he would think so.
The worst.
Bless him. Yeah, we'll crack on then. We'll start with, I wrote the order down. Well, I said the order, I wrote them down, and then we'll see which one. Oh. My phone accidentally started recording in text what we were just saying, so there's just a large fucking paragraph of text now.
Hey, we can do subtitles.
Oh yeah. Accurate ones. So we'll start with the breakthrough phones then, because that's what we just spoke about before we came on. So the first category we're going to cover, the first award, is the best breakthrough performance. It's not necessarily someone that is making their first appearance, but it's someone that might have been around for a while, but this year through one performance or more than one is really like taken that next level in fame, and they've really re-established themselves as a serious player in movies. I'll let you go first then with who you have handed the award to.
Well, I would just say, because I didn't quite understand in terms of what the breakout meant, but I had chosen Zac Efron in Ironclaw, because when you think Zac Efron, you don't think serious performance. You would think High School Musical.
Beautiful.
And you start breaking out into the dance.
And 17 again.
17 again, like Neighbours, like Meet the Neighbours and Baywatch and all that kind of stuff. But
Greatest Showman.
British.
Very serious role.
Yeah, super serious. But like, there's nothing that's really like convinced me as, and it sounds really harsh to say, but convinced me as an actor. Like, it's all stuff that he's kind of been just kind of fallen into, it feels like. And he's obviously made himself popular through the way he looks and what have you. But in the Ironclaw, I know it's a film we both agree is fucking, I'm going to bring it out for the first time in a long time, phenomenal. And his performance just really, really shows that he deserves to be up there with the big boys, like, in terms of acting. The fact that he's not got an actual Oscar nomination for his role in Ironclaw is a fucking shame, because obviously it's a period piece and it's a very, like, quote unquote manly film, but that's what it's supposed to be. Well, not a manly film, but it's supposed to be, like, it's a bit of look on that masculinity and all that kind of through that era. and the way he conveys his emotion, lack of his suppression of emotion and everything is so subdued. It's so emotional. It's so, it's just a really, really strong performance. And that character, without giving too much away, that character goes through fucking hell. He has witnessed hell around him constantly on a day-to-day basis. And it's over the course of the film, you see it chip away at him. You see it chip away at his persona, his masculinity and his life. And it's just a performance that I think Zac Efron, I would have never, if you would have told me the story of him beforehand, the story of the Von Erichs beforehand, and said, this is the person we're going to get to play him, I would have probably fucking, it's like when people said Robert Pattinson's going to be the next Batman kind of thing. You just go, or Heath Ledger's going to be the Joker. You just kind of go, oh, fuck, no, I wouldn't have, I can't imagine him in that role. But then you watch it and it's just amazing. I mean, the whole cast is. But I know Zac Efron is already a massive star and he's already a household name. But I think that this role elevated him in terms of how people see him as an actor.
Yeah, I think it is sort of like a breakthrough in terms of like the work you might be doing going forward, because it is the first time where it's like Zac Efron has made a point to show you how good he is as an actor. It's the first real serious role that I can remember him doing, and he fucking nails it. Like, I love Zac Efron in that movie, so that's a good that is a good pick. My pick is someone that is actually going to be in the Oscars. She's been nominated for an Oscar. Hopefully she wins it. But my breakthrough pick is Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, because I think she's been around for a while. She's made a few movies and TV shows and stuff. But this movie, I feel like it's catapulted her to that sort of like household name status. Like, she's now at the forefront of a lot of conversations about the best movies of the year. Just her performance in general, it's been covered like so in depth by so many different people. It's an incredible performance, like so deeply moving. It takes a lot to perform a scene with Leonardo DiCaprio and come out on top, but to do so with Leo and Robert De Niro and still be the one that like captivates the screen, like, it's fucking insane what she was doing in that movie. I think in an ideal world for me, I mean, I can't say this 100% because I've not watched Poor Things yet, but it's between her and Emma Stone for Best Actress, and I'd like her to win for I think it's such an important role, like covering history and what happened to her people in such a brutal manner. I think it's incredible. I'm watching, like, I watched the SAG Awards because they put that on Netflix a few weeks ago, and watching how emotional she got when she won, that's like, it means so much to her and like to her people that she's been rewarded for the representation she's providing the way she has. And I just think that movie is nowhere near as effective if it's anyone else in that role. So hopefully it's going to lead to more mainstream roles for her going forward, I hope.
I was going to say, you know, a role's good from a somewhat unknown actress or actor, that as soon as that film's released, you start to see news stories of they've been casting this, they've been and they start to like build them. But you see all these stories, and that's what I've kind of seen a few projects have already started picking her up.
Oh, have they? I haven't seen that, but that's good. That's what you want.
Yeah,
I think that was like last year with Ki-hee Kwan, like when he won and he's started being cast in more. So that's what I'm hoping for, because she's incredible in this. So that's why I think while she was around, she wasn't completely unknown, but to most like casual movie fans, they weren't aware of her. And I feel like a lot more people are now because of what she did.
I'm very aware of her.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's going to be on my plan.
I've got a full day off on Sunday, so maybe I'll finally watch it before the Oscars come out.
Fucking should. Well, it's like 3.5 hours long.
That's why I said I've got a full day.
And it's on my plane, so it's a 10-hour flight, so I might just watch it 2.5 times and I'm there.
I don't think you're going to be okay on a 10-hour flight, because I went on, like, it was like 8.5 to New York, and it mentally drained me. When I was on a flight to New York, I watched War for the Planet of the Apes. And when the massive gorilla died from the first movie, I was streaming tears. And I know what you're like when it comes to crying in film, so you're fucked, mate.
I know, yeah. I will be emotional. It's really funny, actually. I'll be fine on the plane, because because I've been to Florida a few times, and I actually enjoy it. I enjoy, like, I mean, because life's so manic, I enjoy that those times where it's like, no, you're stuck here. You've got nowhere to go. This is it. And I've had it with planes. I've had it with long, like those National Express coaches up the country where I'm on it for 12 hours and it's like, you can't do anything else. So just focus on what you want to do. Like, it's not like I need to be doing this, I need to be doing this, which happens so often because my brain's fucking always whizzing. So I'll be fine with that. But speaking of crying, I was on the bus. This is on the bus, right? Because my bus to uni is like 2 hours. So I got the bus to uni in the morning the other day. So I set off, the bus was 7:45 and I watched Maestro, the new Bradley Cooper movie Netflix. Yeah. That's been nominated for an Oscar. That's where I watched it. I watched that on the bus. There were a couple of moments in there. So I was sat, iPad in hand, fucking tears on this bus at like 9:30 in the morning. I was like, this is tragic, even for me.
I can just imagine it at all.
Yeah, like just people getting on and I'm just sat there like, it was terrible. But the film wasn't, it was all right. But yeah, I think Lily Gladstone, breakthrough performance of the year for me. And I hope to see more from her. But like you said, if she's being offered, fingers crossed, she will be more active in some more like bigger movies going forward. Next, we'll talk about the Best Rookie Award, which is one that we've decided to create, which is based on actors or actresses under the age of 20. Because child acting can be very fucking difficult. Like, there's so many movies that are great, and then there'll be a child performance, which is a key role, but it kind of lets it down a little bit because it is hard to find like a really good child actor. So we wanted to not shed some light, but just like recognize great performances from some younger actors this year. I'll go first then, and this is a film I only watched recently, so I'm really glad I watched it before we did this. And it was another movie I watched because it's nominated for Best Picture, and that's Anatomy of a Fall, which, man, for anyone unaware, is about a German woman living in France who is accused of murdering her husband after he's found dead. It's really good. It's like a courtroom investigation movie, all about the French legal system. It's fucking awesome. But there's a young boy in it who plays the main character's son. He's visually impaired, but he's the one that finds his dad. And throughout the movie, you can see like he's kind of losing trust in his mum because he's allowed to sit in the court and listen to the case, and he's hearing like footage of arguments between his parents, and he's like reassessing who he thought she was, what he thought of their relationship, and he's like coming to realize that things weren't as they were. And like his performance is just insane. He's I wrote his name down because he's a French lad. He's called Milo Macedo Grainer, and he's 15 years old now. So he was probably like 13, 14 when they filmed Anatomy of a Fall. But there's a moment towards the end where he gives a speech in the court, and it's essentially like the moment that turns the case. And he speaks about his relationship with his dad and like how he's now reassessing conversations that I had in the past, and it's making him see some stuff. And he breaks down, and like the way he can convey emotion, and like, crying is difficult in films, even for like adult actors, but this kid just fucking, it was unbelievable. Like, I couldn't believe how young he was. Like, it's a performance that if it's a 30-year-old man, I'm expecting best actor nominations at the Oscars. Like, he was that good. And I only watched it recently, so I'm really glad I did before we did this, because I wanted, like, he deserves a shout out. So that's Milo Macedo Grainer from Anatomy of a Fall, who I think I went with Best Rookie Award. Who have you got?
I don't know why you fucking do this to me. You do all this fucking serious shit, and then I'm going to come along with my pick.
Some of mine aren't serious.
I couldn't pick just one person for the best rookie.
I think I know where you're going here.
Nicholas Cantu, Brady Noon, Mike Abbey, and Shaman Brown Jr. And that is Leonardo, Raphael, Donatello, and Michelangelo. For the first time in a Ninja Turtles, and I've spoken about it, how much I fucking love that Ninja Turtles. Have you watched it yet?
Can I just say real quick?
Yeah.
That's on the film. That's on the plane as well, so I might actually watch it.
Fucking, just do it.
Yeah, I think I will.
It's got John Cena in it. There's something for you there.
Yeah. That's all I need.
Just John Cena. It's got Ice Cube playing the bad guy. Not what more you need.
Yeah, true.
I mean, obviously, massive Ninja Turtles fan, so having actual teenagers play the roles of the Ninja Turtles was really refreshing. And like in the film, they are very, very clearly teenagers, like of today's generation, and having those four lads do it felt natural. It didn't feel forced. And I do like past iterations where you've got celebrity voices and what have you, but having these just felt so fresh. You could tell they were enjoying it during like the press tours. You could tell how much they loved it. And the performances themselves are like really, really good as well. I think they've never been in anything big. This is kind of like the first major roles. So I could have used these for Breakout as well. If everything, I could have just done everything, Breakout, Ninja Turtles, everything. And they clearly all, like I say, they're clearly all having fun while they're doing it. I think it's the fact that you, as you're doing it, you've got like the four typical types of teens. You've got the nerdy one, the party one, the personalities of the Ninja Turtles, and they all fit so well. And like, it's while they're fighting, like the voice is breaking and like stammering and like not being able to find the words whilst they're in the action and all that. And it feels natural compared to having the celebrity voices before. I just think they're a perfect fit. So a massively different choice to what you kind of went for, but I do think they deserve some recognition because, I mean, as much as I know it's pretty kiddie, but the Ninja Turtles are big shoes to fill. And especially for young actors and actresses going into roles into like big fandoms, like we've spoke about big fandoms and they can be toxic before, it could have gone really wrong. But luckily, I believe like they're quite loved in the role. So obviously they did a very, very good job.
Yeah. I reserve my judgment for me playing Jenny.
Episode we come back, and because we've talked about potentially doing like our least favorite films of all time as like our first episode back,
yeah, one versus one.
If that's what we come back and you choose that, I'll fucking go nuts.
That would be funny.
I'll quit. We don't need to carry on.
No, I'll be watching that on the plane probably. So I can't really judge too much on the picks, but I've heard good stuff about the performances. And sometimes it is just important to have kids playing kids, because too often, especially with animated movies, you get like 30-year-old women playing like 11-year-old boys. It's weird. Like, it's weird how it works. But
my mind was blown when I first saw the voice actress for Ash Ketchum.
I don't know who that was.
Yeah, it was like a middle-aged woman at the time.
Was it? So that was me when I found out Bart Simpson was a woman. That blew my fucking head off when I was a kid. I couldn't believe it. So we talked about the youngest actors that we want to give awards to. The rookie award, anyone under 20. Like, I thought when we were coming up with these awards, it's only fair then to talk about the old timers, the veterans, they don't have to be icons, like screen icons, but just those older actors that just roll back the years and give a really great performance this year. So we're talking about actors over 65, which I don't want to say is old because my mum isn't too far off or she'll kill me for saying that's old. But 65 and over for the best veteran award, which we want to hand out. This one for me was, I mean, there was only one I could really consider, but I'm interested to see what you went with.
See, I looked through my letterbox of what 2023 movies I watched last year, and surprisingly, not a lot of older people in the movies. Yeah. Like, in terms of roles that like really stood out, there was only really one, and he's already a GOAT, so it feels kind of. And I'm guessing I know who yours is going to be as well. But I went Morgan Freeman in A Good Person, a film we talked about before. I mean, he's always a heavyweight. He's always a heavyweight when he comes into a film. Obviously, his voice is very iconic. But in A Good Person, he just shows he's broken the entire film, but he still manages to be charming. He's charming, depressing, broken, heartbroken, but still manages to show loving compassion. I know you've not watched it yet, have you?
No. I need to, though, because obviously I love Zach Braff, Florence Pugh and Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, and I think paired up with Florence Pugh in a role where, again, she is broken as well, it's a film about, without repeating the word broken too much, it is a film about broken people, but he is somehow still the light in it, even though he's probably the most fucked up out of the two of them. And it's just a stellar performance. I really, really enjoyed it. And his kind of story arc goes in a way that you don't really kind of expect. You expect him to kind of do the right thing in times when he's supposed to do the right thing and he doesn't, and he's when you expect him to do the wrong thing, he doesn't. It's out of all the Morgan Freeman films I've watched, and I've watched quite a few, it's nice to see that he can still give a refreshing take on what he can do. So it was really, really worth the watch, I would say, definitely.
Yeah, it is one that I do intend to watch. Because, like I said, I love Morgan Freeman. I think Florence Pugh's great. And Zach Braff is someone that means a lot to me. So I do want to watch it just for the fact he directed it. I think it's on Sky now, so I should get around and watch it.
Yeah.
Again, I can't say too much, but I imagine it's a good pick because it's Morgan Freeman. So you can't really go wrong with him. That's interesting, though, because I'm now going with another icon, which is pretty, it's probably obvious who I'm going with. One of my favourite actors of all time. It's the second time I'm talking about this movie, so it probably gives away what my one of my favourite movies of 2023 was.
I tried not to do a duplicate in any way, shape or form, so...
Yeah, well, I don't give a fuck. I'm talking about one of my favourite movies. There's no way I could do this and say that anyone over that age, I could give it over this man. So my pick was Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, because that motherfucker is like 80 years old or something close to 80 now, and he gave one of his best performances in like a decade. Like, his role as the villain, which we've seen him play villains so many times over the years, but his role as the villain in that, it's so different to what we've seen before. It's so calculating, but like really sinister. And the way he like fakes, not to give too much away about the film, because I mean, most people, like, it's based on a true story about a really famous serial killer anyway, but the way he like fakes his like an adoration for this group of people, and he becomes like almost like a celebrity in the town for like his relationships with everyone, and like he's looked at as like this cult hero to all these Native American and indigenous people, and to know the sinister role he was playing behind the scenes of, to bring about their downfall so we can get their land and their money. Like, it's such like a terrifying performance from him, and it's not something that we've come to accustomed to see in recent years. Like, after maybe the mid 2000s, he's done a lot of these like really terrible comedies, like Bad Grandpa, I think it's called, or Dirty Grandpa, or something like that. Like, he's done so many movies like that, which is just, it's a limit on what he can do. So just watching him come back now and remind everyone, like, he's fucking Robert De Niro, and he is one of the greatest actors of all time, and he can still do this when he's literally almost 80 years old. It's like, it was so impressive, and he's nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He's not going to get it, which is a shame, but he's going up against a couple of big hitters, so I'm not too surprised. But I just think, as an actor, there's been few better, like, ever, and I think this, it's not one of his best roles of all time, but it's like a really return to form for him this year, I think, and I was just really happy to watch him roll back those years. So I had to give him a shout out, despite the fact it's my second Killers of the Flower Moon nomination. But I'm pretty sure it's my last one.
I was really tempted for this best veteran to be like, he's been in the business for over 60 years. He's iconic. And then just stop talking about Godzilla.
Yeah, you probably could have, though, because how many you fucking watched? It's just limiting it to one role. Oh, wait, he had that one film last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
What was that one called? Godzilla.
No, don't worry, we'll talk about that later.
Oh, is it in the list? Is it? Cool.
Of course it's in the list. I'm not going to go one episode without mentioning Godzilla.
We'll move on then to another... It's almost like the rookie one, and this one's the best debut. You haven't got one for this because you haven't seen a film where it's anyone's debut. So that can be an actor's first movie role or a director's first... like their directorial debut. I've seen a few, and this was hard. There's one that I haven't got, but I wanted to shout it out anyway, and that's Dominic Sessa in The Holdovers, who had never been in a film before. It's a movie about, it's set at Christmas, about a grumpy teacher who is left to care for one lad at this boarding school when everyone else goes home for Christmas, and he's the one lad that stays behind. He's really, really good in it, and the only reason he was cast was because they were filming at his school. Like, he went to school, then they were filming. And because he was at that school, they let him audition and they cast him over anyone. He'd never done film, never done TV or anything. And he's fucking awesome. So I wanted to give him a shout out, but that's not my pick.
Okay, fair enough.
My pick is for a director in one of my favourite movies of the year, and that's Celine Song, who directed Past Lives, because I fucking... It knocked me for six with that movie. Like, it's a movie about... like childhood love and like what could have been versus what eventually was. It's about a South Korean woman who is in a very close friendship slash almost relationship with one of her friends in South Korea, this young lad, and they're only about like 10. But it's that childhood puppy love. And then her family move to Toronto and she grows up in Canada and moves to New York. So she obviously adapts like the English language and Korean becomes like her second language almost. And she rarely uses it. And after years, she reconnects with him and they grow close again. And then it's all through like FaceTime and stuff. And then they go their separate ways again. And then when they finally meet in person, maybe like 30 years later, she's married and it's not one of those where like the husband's the villain keeping them apart. She's happily married and the husband's a great guy. And it's not about these two and like their love finally being realized all these years later. It's about what might have been versus like this, what they have to recognize is now reality. And there's no future for them. And he has to recognize that while she's with her husband, but they all meet up and it's just really fucking moving. Like it was incredible. Like I'd heard good stuff about it. So I wanted to watch it for a while. And when I eventually got to it, I was like, somehow this is even better than I expected. And for someone to convey like all those like powerful messages and bring out these sort of performances in a first feature film, I think it's fucking wild. Like, I don't know how you can, and it's nominated for Best Picture, like how you can be your very first director, like your directorial debut, and you get nominated for Best Picture is such a fucking flex. And I just think it feels like it was made by a veteran. Like the way like she tells a story, it's not paint by numbers. It's like interesting. It's got interesting like turns and twists throughout. And it's really complex, but like I just couldn't get my head around it. Like for being someone's first film, it was like, I remember watching Boys in the Hood and finding out that John Singleton, who died, so that was his first film as well. Like, I don't know how people just come in and fucking fire like this because it's absurd, but she did. And I loved every minute of it. So that's who I went with because she wasn't nominated for Best Director. And I know there was a lot of talk about Greta Gerwig being left off the Best Director things, but for me, I wish that's who I'd have got on there if I could. I think Celine's song was incredible and she deserves more recognition than she's got. But yeah, that's it for that one. Because like you said,
that one's on the watch list for me, definitely.
Yeah, I think I messaged you about it, didn't I, when I watched it?
I think so, yeah.
I think I said Past, I just watched Past Lives.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was absolutely insane. I think it's on Netflix now, so it's accessible.
The problem is, because I've spent my own, like the past fucking couple months with my own target of trying to watch every Godzilla movie, everything else has fell by the wayside. So I feel like I've got a watch list of all these great movies from this year that I'm going to be watching, last year that I'm going to be watching this year after the Oscars.
Yeah.
Like Past Lives, Poor Things is on the watch list. Obviously Killers of the Flower Moon. I think
Grace Holdovers. You almost watched that last week.
Yeah, I really wanted to watch that, but
that would have been, I mean, you'd have had a best debut there.
Not only that, I imagine I would have had a lot more categories I could have filled with, but yeah, that was one of them where I was like, I really wanted to watch it, but I've had a rough day. I can't be asked to go to the cinema, but it will be watched. It will be watched.
Yeah, we'll move on then to the next category, which is one that a lot of people actually continuously ask the Oscars to introduce, and that's the best stunt work, I think that's what we got, stunt acting. It's the best, like, because stunt act, like stuntmen and stuff in Hollywood don't get anywhere near enough recognition for the shit they do. And sometimes pulling off some of these incredible stunts is some of the highlights of these movies. So if the Oscars aren't doing it, we fucking are. We're bringing it in.
We're putting our foot down, Oscars.
Yeah. This is it. You best take notice. We expect a response. If not, there'll be trouble. But yeah, like I said, it's these sorts of roles where it might be an actor or it might be the stuntman performing just incredible feats of like death-defying work or even just fight scenes, just like the choreography, like stuff. It just doesn't get enough attention. So what did you go with? I think I have an idea, but
let's not even fucking pretend like we don't know what I'm going to fucking talk about, shall we?
I think I know what it is. But go
and on. To be honest, knowing you've not watched it is an insult to this category. Bruce Concepcion, Jeremy Marinus, Dave Camarillo, and Lee Kang, and of course Keanu Reeves in John Wick 4. Like every John Wick is just a tour de force of stunt work. I mean, shit, go fuck yourself. We watched the first one together, and like, I know you're not a fan of Keanu Reeves in terms of acting, but outside of that, like, even you could say that the action was fucking astounding, and yeah, that the main selling point of these movies. But John Wick, like, each film, it kind of Fast and Furious is it, but in like a not shit way. Even though I love Fast and Furious, like, every film it elevates higher and higher in terms of just how fucking crazy can these stunts get. And John Wick 4, they get fucking crazy. I don't know how they fucking do it, these four guys. And Keanu Reeves, he does a lot of his own kind of gun work and stuff. But it's just constant all the time. And when as you're about to take a breather, something else happens, and there's so many like falls and drops and hits and fucking car stunt work and everything. I don't know the best way to describe it other than it's fucking balls to the wall constantly. And obviously when you're watching the film, you can't differentiate between the four or five people that are doing just to clarify, I'm talking about specifically Keanu Reeves' team. Even though there's loads more stunt people in that film, probably more stunt people than actors, definitely. But there's a whole sequence underneath the Arc de Triomphe with on the roundabout with all the cars, and cars are constantly going whilst they're shooting and being hit. There's a whole section in Japan where a hotel is just overrun with mercenaries trying to get them, and it's just samurai swords and melee weapons. There's a bit that we spoke about in the 2023 episode where it's an overhead shot and it's going from room to room overhead, and there's just all this gunplay going off. There's probably one of the most iconic moments in all of John franchise, including some stairs, which if you've not seen it, you won't understand that. But if you have seen it, you'll know what I'm fucking talking about. It's just phenomenal. In terms of action, John Wick, I don't think anybody does it better than the John Wick franchise. And I know it's a bold statement because there's a lot of action movies out there, but I genuinely think that each one of them beats everything else that's come before it, including the John Wick film before, once the one after is released. And the stunt work in them, it's got to be precise. It's got to be like rigid and fluid at the same time. And yeah, I don't, like, you watched the first one with me, like, you can't watch those films and say that there's definitely not a stuntwork and action going into it. Like, there's a bit where he just jumps out of a fucking window and just lands, and you'd think, oh, that's definitely CG, but it's not. The background might be CG, but the falling and the impact is all real. And that happens in John Wick 4 a lot. There's a bit where there's a massive action sequence, and to get out of it, again, he jumps out of a window, and it's just a massive drop, and you'd think, again, that's CG. It's not, it's full on. So people coming off motorcycles, people falling out of cars, people getting hit, it's all real. And I think that's what I appreciate about it the most. That's what makes it top tier compared to all the other action movies that are out there.
That is an interesting pick. I think I had a feeling you'd go John Wick. My pick feels obvious because there's one man.
Killers of the Flower. You can't pick Killers of the Flower Moon again.
Yeah, it's Leo in Killers of the Flower Moon when he pulls a face. No, my pick is one man that's become synonymous with doing his own stunts, and that's Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Because there's obviously the very, very highly publicized stunts that he pulls off in the movie. And it's different type of stunt work to what you were talking about with the fight scene and stuff. This is more like just individually Tom Cruise. Like, there's the moment in... Have you seen it? Sorry.
Yeah, of course I have.
Yeah. So there's a moment when he's in the car with Hayley Atwell, and the stuff with the car when they're like spinning around in the car chase, I think is brilliant. The stuff with the train at the very end is brilliant. The scenes in Venice when he's running through the alleys and he's fighting in those little alleys, the fight choreography there is incredible. But it's hard to talk about without bringing up the one specific scene, which everyone knew going in, and it's just going off that fucking cliff on that motorbike and just falling. Like free falling all that way before he pulls out the parachute, like knowing that that is Tom Cruise doing that. Like, I can't talk about stunt work without talking about the fact that this guy is probably one of the biggest movie stars of all time, and he's willing to do it all himself. Like, it's fucking insane. Like, yeah. Was it one of them? a few years ago. Maybe it was Fallout, when he does the Halo jump in the sky.
Yeah.
What the fucking hell's wrong with him, first of all? Like, he's put his life on the line. Like, it's incredible. Like, I don't think anyone does it like Tom Cruise. And I'm excited to see what he gets up to in Dead Reckoning Part 2, which I think isn't... I think they scrapped part of that.
Oh, it's not called that.
I
can't wait
for it. Something. Did you see he was filming it in Derbyshire this week? Was he in Bakewell this week.
Amazing.
I know. Fucking Eleanor told me. I was like, fuck. Apparently he's going to some restaurant.
You say, well, that's where, like... was it not the Peak District where he filmed the train bit? So
yeah, so they're obviously back on that, I think. But he went into some restaurant in Bakewell, and everyone was like, "Oh, the fuck is Tom Cruise?" That'd have been surreal. But yeah, he
walking through Bakewell, just getting yourself a little tart, and then out Tom Cruise.
It'd be fucking weird, wouldn't it? I'd love to chat. I'd love to just pick his brains about movies. I bet he's like,
you would literally look him in the eye and you go, "What the fuck is wrong with you?"
No, I wouldn't even speak to him. I'd be like, I'm going to avoid that motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I could ever have a sit down, I'd just love to, like, because I reckon he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of movies. Like, he seems so, like, passionate about it. I'd love to speak to him.
I think he's one of them actors that people like to shit on because of, obviously, his religion and his history and stuff, his personal life. But if you ever see any kind of interview or, like, featurette or anything where it's about movies, like, he is very, he's not a stupid man. He knows fucking everything.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's so, like, passionate about, like, the reality, like, the realism and the scale of movies and stuff, like, before the Top Gun, on Top Gun DVD and on the Mission Impossible Blu-rays and stuff, it says, like, if you've got motions moving on your TV, like, he cares about how you view movies. And I think that, like, we've both kind of got that theme of the realism in the movies. Like, he's got that, like, he needs people to know that they know this stunt actually fucking happened. Same with, like, the John Wick stuff. Keanu Reeves was very passionate about, like, no, I need you to know that all the gun stuff I'm doing, like, I train for it, like, yeah. I can do it. And it's I think that's where the action becomes lost, when it becomes like CGI fight fuck fest. And it's
too many films to pull that shit off these days. It does my head in.
And it's not to go into, like, superhero movies and what have you, but one of my favourites MCU movies since Endgame, because I know that's the marker, is since Endgame, is Shang-Chi. And Shang-Chi had a lot of real stunt-coordinated fight scenes that were brilliant, like, and very realistic looking, like the one on the bus and the one in the, like, the abandoned hotel and what have you. And then it ends on a big CGI fight fest. And you just, like,
yeah, it's disappointing.
Build up your film to have this, like, really good grounded combat, and then you just ruin it by, and Mission Impossible or John Wick doesn't do that.
Yeah, I agree that the ending of Shang-Chi was disappointing compared to what we were, like, promised throughout the film. The stuff on the scaffolding was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I love a giant fucking dragon, don't get me wrong, but don't also then get rid of the stuff that makes your film unique.
Yeah. I think, like, bringing it back to what you said about Tom Cruise and, like, how he's, there's this persona of him about why people don't like him and shit on him. I was one of them. I didn't watch any Tom Cruise movies, like, ever. And I always thought I didn't like him. I thought I don't like him as an actor because of stuff I'd heard. And then I watched Top Gun Maverick. And since then, I've watched so many Tom Cruise movies. I actually think he is legit one of the best actors. And that's been lost through his stuff in action movies. Like, he's great in Mission Impossible. And all the stunts he does is incredible. But because he's always playing the same character, and it is more about the stunts than it is his actual performance, it is lost how good an actor he is. But apparently he's been linked with a new Tarantino movie. So
yeah, I've heard that.
I can't wait for serious Tom Cruise again. Like, fucking bring it on. Let's go. That's what I want.
I genuinely think Tarantino and Tom Cruise are going to give us something fucking special.
I hope so. That Tarantino's last movie. Excited. I'm so excited but upset at the same time. But yeah, that's my love on Tom Cruise. I think he's incredible in that. I mean, he's incredible in all the Mission Impossible movies. All the stunts he's done over the years, it's insane. But Dead Reckoning, I wanted to show it, give it some love, because I thought it was an incredible movie, but that's not one that's been even entertaining the conversation of any major awards this year for anything. So yeah. I wanted to give it a shout. You what, sorry?
It's not that kind of movie.
No, it's not. I feel like if any Mission Impossible movie was ever going to be nominated for something like that, it was Fallout, and even that wasn't, so then we might as well just call it a day. So we've talked about the best stunt work then. We've talked about performances in movies, and this is another category that a lot of people want at the Oscars, And that's the best animated, what do you say, animated voiceover performance, like voice acting.
Performance, yeah.
Because a lot of people don't credit animated movies in the same way you do live action. Like, it doesn't get anywhere near enough love or respect. And we're both big, big fans of like animation and stuff like that. And I don't know how many, I don't know the numbers. There might be some in the past, but I'd wager if there has, there's probably maybe been like one or two people ever nominated for a best actor for voiceover work.
Yeah, probably not.
I can't imagine there's many. No. And I couldn't name you one. So we wanted to talk about best voice performances because it's a year where there's been quite a few significant ones. I'll go first. This one's a bit off, like, it's a bit random. It's not one that'd immediately spring to mind, but for me, it was my favourite part about the movie. And it's Across the Spider-Verse, and it is Oscar Isaac's performance in that movie. Because I think the way he played the role, I can't even remember the character's name now, off my head.
Yellow hair.
Oh, yeah, him, that motherfucker. Spider-Man, what is it, like 2099 or something? His role as Miguel,
okay.
Yeah, he's incredible. I think because regardless of which side you're on, you can see it in two very different ways. There's a charisma to him, which shows why so many of these Spider-Men have lent themselves to his leadership, and they've followed like what he believes, and like he's kind of taken charge, and so many people have fallen in behind him, and you can see why. But then there's also a really sinister side of him when he's like dealing with Miles Morales and the stuff with those guys, and when he's chasing him, like, I think he can play both sides of it so well in that movie, and he does. I fucking love Oscar Isaac in general. Like, I think he's one of the most underrated actors around these days. I love him like in almost everything he does. But him as Miguel, I just think it's hard. It was important that they nailed that role because it had to be someone that could carry like the gravitas of what Spider-Man went through in his life, which has led him to really this like point of view of life and the way he's like taken charge and how he views everything. It has to really hit home, and he does a really good job of that. And I think voice acting, it can be hard to like express yourself in that manner because you don't get to do like the facial expressions or the mannerisms or the way you just carry yourself. But he must have a sore throat after getting in that fucking act voiceover booth, let me tell you, because he fucking goes for it. And I just think coming out of that film, I was like, I can't wait to see more of him. Like, that was one of my biggest things, is I can't wait to see more of that character going forward. So that's why I wanted to give, it's not like one of the biggest performances of the year, it's a supporting role, but it was one that I just felt I wanted to share some love with because I thought it was incredible.
I nearly went Across the Spider-Verse as well. I nearly went Daniel Kaluuya as because that role, like, as an anarchist, he's like an anarchist, he's the devil's advocate voice, he's the one that pushes Miles to, you know, go against the grain, and he has so much fun with it. And it's a character that people already liked, but now I think it's going to be one of those where, kind of like Gwen Stacy and stuff like that, where that character now in the comics and everything is going to elevate and you're going to see a lot more of him. But this is my very unserious pick, but I'm not going to talk about voice actor of the year and not fucking give it to Jack Black as Bowser. You can go fuck yourself. Like, everybody had very mixed reactions to the voice cast of the Super Mario movie. Obviously, Chris Pratt being the one that people are very much against. I think he did a fantastic job, but whatever. But my love for Jack Black is unreal. And having him play one of the most iconic video game villains of all time, pull it off, make it menacing, funny, and heartbreaking and lovely and all that kind of stuff. And have him obviously bring out Peaches, one of the most, I would say, more iconic than I'm Just Ken, but whatever. One of the most iconic animated film songs as well. Again, it's just another voice. I would have put the Ninja Turtles in here had I not wanted to repeat myself, and I didn't. But it's just such a fun role. You can see why they cast him. He again has so much fun. He's not a stranger to voice acting with, you know, stuff like Kung Fu Panda, but I think now I can't see Bowser without picturing Jack Black's voice. And he had, like you say, he just has so much fun with it. I think he really like ties the film together and really brings it all, like lends credibility to all the other celebrity voice actors, which felt like stunt casting. And Jack Black, I think, is up there with one of the, like, in terms of actors, that somebody whose voice is so unique and iconic that you can probably put it in most roles and you can just buy into it because you can tell he's got a love for it. So not as serious as your answer, but you ain't fucking telling me that you didn't watch the Mario movie and absolute fucking love Bowser in it. Go fuck yourself.
I really liked, I wasn't that big a fan of the Super Mario movie. Like, I thought it was fine, but I wasn't like a huge fan of it. But I thought Jack Black was fantastic. And I'm not really that big a Jack Black fan. I'm the opposite. Like, it has to be a really good role for me to like him. Too many times, especially live action, his facial expressions drive me fucking nuts. Have you ever seen The Holiday?
Yes, I have.
He's awful.
No,
Kate Winslet deserves better.
We've talked about this.
Oh, fuck no.
Grace is gonna kill you.
No, not about him in that film. Like, how does Cameron Diaz get Jude Law? Kate Winslet has to fuck set with Jack Black. Like, fucking ruthless.
Grace would say she's not settling that. That's the best choice of the film. Like,
no chance. I'd rather have old Arthur.
I'm sure we had this argument in the Christmas episode as well.
I'd rather have Chris the old Arthur, bless him.
In Mario, I also like that. They kind of play him up as the villain, and then once you've got him alone, he starts singing the song and he kind of twists it almost immediately. I really love it, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a take that you wouldn't expect on Bowser, but it's one that works, I think, especially now. So yeah, that's a good pick. I like that performance. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of Jack Black. It's very rare that I really like what he does, but I did in that movie. It's probably the best thing about it for me. I love what you said, like, my serious pick, which was a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, but like, you're talking about how like he conveys the leadership and the darkness and all this, and
yeah,
I'm like,
true.
And mine's like, he fucking sings Peaches.
Yeah, that's true. Next then we'll talk about the best sequel/franchise IP. Which now, I think I know where yours is going. Yeah. I didn't beforehand.
Just get my boy. I'll just hold it until I'm ready.
Yeah, well, it's you get to go first, so...
Who is it?
Yeah.
Is so, it right?
Tell me why you went with Godzilla.
-1. Oh, what a movie. It's, like, now re-watching all the old stuff, I'm going to appreciate it a lot more when I get back around to watching it. I know that. But it was my first Japanese Godzilla movie that I watched. I'd only watched the MonsterVerse stuff and the horrendous Matthew Broderick one, which, thanks to my friend David, I now have VHS on display. So I'd only kind of seen that side of the Godzilla lore. And obviously I've seen silly gifs from the older movies, but watching this, I didn't really know what to expect other than people raving about it. And fuck me, what a movie. I knew going in historically that the human side of the story is something that fans don't really like about Godzilla, the old Godzilla movies. But the human side of this story is just as, if not more compelling than when Godzilla's on screen. And watching the American ones, I'm so used to being like, oh, fuck yeah, it's Godzilla. This is going to be badass. But actually in -1, it's shit, it's Godzilla. This is terrifying.
I think that's not a balance that they get right very often. It should be fucking terrifying, I think.
Yeah, and it, like, obviously is an allegory for like nuclear war and like the after effects of that and the consequences. And he's like, it really plays up that he's just he isn't a hero, he isn't a villain, he's just nature.
Yeah.
And you're taking course. And it's a film that like really, really plays in on that. And the destruction doesn't feel cool. It doesn't feel badass, which is why I didn't put it in one of the other categories. It just feels like nature, and it feels like this unstoppable force. And it's terrifying. There's a scene where he first uses his breath, like his famous like atomic breath, and it is just fucking terrifying. Like, his face is a fucking thing of nightmares. But yeah, like I say, the human story is so compelling as well. Like, everything for the first time in, like, obviously not watching the Japanese one, but for the first time since watching the American ones, it's like, okay, so what's going to happen to the humans then? Whereas usually just like, where the fuck's Godzilla? And having that perfect balance, I think, is why everybody has loved it so much. And again, it's like the budget wasn't massive for these kind of films, so for what it does, it looks amazing. what now, having watched the older stuff, it pays a lot of like love and it like homages the originals a lot as well. So it's respectful, but also doing something new. And it probably one of my favorite films of last year. And I know as soon as I rewatch it, I'm probably going to love it more as well. So I think it's just a massively, massively good movie.
So I've not watched it, but I've always said, in terms of Godzilla, I'd really like them to do something like Cloverfield, the first one, but with the monster being Godzilla. Is that what that one's kind of like?
No.
I'd love something like that.
Yeah, you kind of get that in a little bit in the Gareth Edwards one, where it's constantly looking up from a character's point of view. But this one's more, it feels more like a very traditional Godzilla movie. But like it feels like the original, the very first 1954 one, if it was made today, which is exactly what it is. So that's why it feels that way. Yeah. Like the very, very first one, 1954, before they bring in all the other monsters and the goofiness and whatever, is a very, very serious, dark movie. And this is the exact same. It's not fun in the slightest.
Fair enough. That, I think, it is something I want to check out, because I've grown very disillusioned with the shite that they're putting out in America. Like that Godzilla Kong 2, whatever the fuck it's called, looks so bad.
You gotta have balance. Like Minus One's a serious one, but I also want to see giant fucking monkeys fight giant fucking lizards.
It just looks shit. And I wasn't even that big a fan of Godzilla vs. Kong the first time, because we watched that together, I think, the first time I ever watched it. And I thought that was pants.
Me and you have very different tastes.
Yeah, we do, which is why it's time to talk about my favourite sequel / franchise IP. And this is a movie that, like you said, we've got very different tastes. I'm not sure you've watched it, but that's Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
What a fucking movie.
Yeah, well, you said you don't really like horror, so I wasn't too sure.
Yeah, but there's exceptions. We've talked about this in the horror. Like, there's some films that are just fucking, there's an exception, and I will love with all of my soul, Evil Dead being one of them.
Yeah, and Evil Dead Rise is fucking epic. It's so gory, it's so terrifying, it's so sinister, and that's everything I want in a horror movie. Like, some of the stuff they do in that with, like, people chewing on glass, which is my biggest cringe ever. Like, I could watch so many horrific acts being carried out in these movies, but that one, I'm always like, I can't even look. Like, it makes me feel sick. The cheese grated to the leg, like there's just some unbelievably disgusting things. Like, it's so gruesome, it's pure like gore, it's body horror, and I love every bit of it. Like, changing the setting from a cabin in the woods, like the majority of the Evil Dead movies have been, and putting it in this city and in this apartment building during like a blackout, and I don't know if going in I thought it would have worked, but it worked so effectively. Like, it was so fucking good. And the environment was terrifying. Having the mum, like the shots through the I don't know what they're called, the eye hole, is it? Yeah. Whatever the fuck they are called on her door. Having the shot through that where she's outside, look, oh, it was fucking so well done. I loved it. I fucking loved it so much. And I love, I love any kind of horror. But I love those horror movies where it's like, just sit back and just watch carnage for an hour and a half, and you'll probably feel different when you finished it. You'll have changed somehow, but it'll be worth it. And that's what Evil Dead Rise did. I thought it was fucking class. I wanted to shout out something like Guardians 3, which I thought was fantastic. Yeah. But
Evil Dead Rise. It's fine.
Yeah. Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
Glorious fuck.
It's one of my favorite openings as well.
Yeah. The stuff, because that's the opening is where you expect the many Evil Dead films to be. It's the lake house. Yeah. It's in the middle of nowhere. And then it takes us back to this apartment building. That's fucking sick. I loved it.
And as part of the opening, has one of the best title cards when she's fucking raised out of the water and it just fucking bams up.
Like, yeah. I also love what they do with the characters, because they give characters like these layers. Like the kids, it felt like we'd known too much about them that they were indispensable, but then they still brutally fucking murdered them. Like, you don't see that often in horror movies, especially. I think one of the main characters was trans, and you think, okay, you get stuff like that, you're like, right, that person's safe, and then it's like, oh wait, no, they're fucking not. And it's like the other main girl who seems to be playing a really important role, and then all of a sudden she's chewing glass, and it's like, oh shit, I thought she was like untouchable, but obviously not. Like, I just think it really like defies like your expectations. It plays with your mind, and it just, I didn't, most of it I didn't see coming, and I was like, this is what horror should be, man. It's fucking so fun. So yeah, I had to go Evil Dead Rise. One of my favorite sequels of the year. Next then, we've got the best adaptation, or adaption, should I say, which is what you recommended. And that's something that's based...
And I don't know why I did, because I then struggled to think of an answer.
It's something that's based on a certain source material. And well, obviously they have the best adapted scripts at the Oscars, which is somewhat similar. But this is just in general, like how similar it is to what it is recreating. Also, whether the different twists and turns and the way it's changed and modified works, how effective it is. So it's just like the best adaptation in general, not just the script. I went with a movie that was in my top 10 of 2023. And that is Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret, because Rachel McAdams is everything. It's obviously based on the Judy Blume book from, I think, the 1970s, and it's set in a similar time period. And it's about the little girl. I mean, I've spoken about this before, so I won't say too much, but it's about a young girl who's forced to move from a big city to this small rural town after her dad gets a job. And it's about her meeting all these new people while she's going, starting to enter puberty and going through those changes. She's growing up and meeting a new group of friends, discovering like boys for the first time. Like, it's like she's shocked when she has a crush. The stuff where like her and her friends are like trying to figure out how to be more grown up, and like doing certain exercises to try improve the chest area. Like, it's just really like funny stuff. But the reason why I think I put it here is because of why it's different to the book, which the book covers all of that. But the, what the movie does differently is that it also places a focus on the mum, which is Rachel McAdams. So there you go.
Of course. Yeah.
But like, it's in these movies, it's too often when they move to these towns, it's always like, how's the kid adapting? But this one also like shows that, but it also shows how the mum's struggling in the new environment as well. And it's like, it's not all smooth sailing for her character either, because they move for the dad. She's also had to make a sacrifice. It's not just the child that did. And sometimes that's ignored in a lot of these sorts of movies. So it shows her struggling, the general expectation that's been put on her by like the community to chip in, and she doesn't feel like she can say no. And then the way that plays on her. And also like there's a lot of stuff with her mother. The main character's grandmother, played by Kathy Bates, and how she deals with the fact her family have all moved away and left her in this city alone. Like, it's just really good. And I think I've not read the book, but I've read a lot of reviews and I've listened to podcasts talking about it, and a lot of the Rachel McAdams stuff and a lot of the folks on the adults isn't there. So I love that they've added that, and I think the movie would have been good anyway, but I think adding that focus on the parents and seeing how their lives have been impacted as well, actually, it's what bumped it to great for me. And it was one of my favourite movies of the year, so I wanted to talk about it somewhere.
Yeah, and it's one, again, that's on the list of films of last year that I'm probably going to end up watching this year. I know you've talked about it enough, and I keep saying I want to watch it.
I mean, it's fucking Rachel McAdams. I'm in love.
I know, I'll get around to it. I'm sorry. I really wanted to talk about Barbie or Oppenheimer in this one, but they're getting enough love as it is. And I think there's a lot of films that are fun that deserve, that won't ever get looked at. And I think one of those films, again, you're making me look stupid because you pick your really serious shit and I'm going really stupid shit. But one adaptation that I really, really enjoyed this year was the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
Yeah, like, I liked that.
Like, we only played Dungeons & Dragons together twice, once or twice. And it, we're
twice,
not
over Zoom.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't like, we're not huge. Like, I'm not a huge Dungeons & Dragons fan, but I know enough about it to know that this was very, like, a massively respectful film to the source material. I worked with somebody who's a huge Dungeons and Dragons fan, and when that film came out, like, he'd watched it 4 or 5 times and told me everything about it and how it was respectful, and did you see this and did you see that. Like, no, because I don't know Dungeons and Dragons. But it's very like, but then looking into it, like, knowing that it was like the people who made it obviously have a love for it, and it was such a fun movie. It was like the fantasy Guardians of the Galaxy almost, and seeing all like the gelatinous cube and like the different kind of species and how magic is done, and like dragons aren't just like these big strong things, they're like fat little things that are protecting the hordes, and all the stuff that I know from the books and like the guidebooks and the games and stuff are there. And like, there's a lot of world building in the film, of stuff in the background that as a casual viewer like myself, like, oh, I kind of know who that is, or not even knowing it at all, but for the fans being like, oh shit, that's that, oh shit, that's that. I think it was really, really fun, and a fun movie too. Like, it didn't take it and completely change it up for the sake of being accessible to everybody, which is what a lot of adaptations do in these kind of movies. They'll change it up so that, like, they'll change a character type or a character just to be, you know, accessible or funny to everybody, which I know James Gunn does do a lot, especially with the Guardians movies. But it feels like in this one, they didn't do that. Managed to keep it fun and managed to keep people engaged. I know it didn't do very well, but the people that did watch it, I've not seen a bad word said about it. So yeah, I think Dungeons & Dragons deserves a bit of love because it is one of the more underrated fun movies of the year.
Yeah, I remember watching the trailers and I thought that they've MCU'd this to the point where it's like they're going to have all these jokes and it's going to do my head in. But I watched it anyway and I actually thought the jokes, every joke they made landed perfectly. I thought it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed Dungeons & Dragons. I wish, obviously it didn't make too much, so I don't know what the plans for the future are, but I wish they would make a sequel. Like, that's, I think it deserves one, and I think the cast were incredible. So it's a good pick. I like that movie a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Pine is probably one of my favourite Chris's. I think he's the most underrated of all the Chris's as well, so just great to see him have fun in a role too.
I actually think he's the best of the Chris's.
Yeah.
Like, out of the main, that like, how many is it, like four? It's like the quartet of like Hemsworth, Pratt, Evans and Pine. I think Pine's my favourite. I think he's the best. I think he's good even in bad stuff. Like, I wasn't a big fan of Don't Worry Darling, but I thought he was fantastic in it. Yeah. And yeah, we're not the biggest Dungeons & Dragons guys, so I didn't have too much like knowledge going into it, apart from our couple of games where it's safe to say I wasn't really following the rules with how you're supposed to conduct yourself in Dungeons & Dragons, but it was fun. And yeah, I hope they make another one, so that's a good pick. I think we're on the last category now then, right?
I think so.
Which is another one that you suggested, and that's the best fist pump moment, should I say. Just one of those moments in movies where it's really like, it fucking gets you going, like, and not in a naughty way. Realise what I said as soon as I said that, as I need to fuck, no, not gets you going. But it's one that really, like, gets you amped up, and it's really, like, exciting and entertaining, and it's like, you feel like it's one of the highest highs you can feel while watching a movie. Obviously, a lot of movies deliver these, so this is difficult.
Yeah.
Did you have difficulty picking one? Your category that you suggested,
mainly because I didn't want to, like, I had a lot of moments, but mainly because I didn't want to repeat myself, and then I also didn't want to pick the films that are already getting a lot of love. So there's like a lot of stuff in John Wick, obviously Ninja Turtles, the atomic breath scene, like I said, in Godzilla is just fist pump in a very negative way. And then there's moments like in Oppenheimer, like at the end with Emily Blunt, and
yeah, that scene when she turns it, that's the one, definitely one of them.
And then of course Barbie, the scene where it's like, you know how difficult it is to be a woman, that scene, like, I would say. But then there are all films that A, I didn't want to repeat myself, and B, were already getting a lot of love. So I went with one that I know it's not a film that's overly loved, and I know it's disappointing overall to a lot of people. But the opening,
The Flash.
I ain't fucking talking about that.
Is shit. It when they wheel Christopher Reeve's corpse out for The Flash?
They don't even do that. They can't even have the decency to get any kind of permission. No, I ain't talking about that. Shit. Why would you put that on me? No, it's a franchise that I love, even though sometimes I hate it. And it's the opening of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Like, what a fucking opening to it. Like, not only is it the kind of one of the best uses of the de-aging technology I've ever seen, but it's also like, yeah, here we fucking go. We're back. We're fighting the Nazis. We're back fighting the Nazis. It's fucking... This feels like Indiana Jones. The music's there, the action's there, the fucking charm's there. It feels like Harry, like it, obviously it is Harrison Ford, but it feels like Harrison Ford got his groove back in terms of, because usually he's a miserable old bastard and that's what he likes playing. But like doing that, like it felt like original and indie. And you can tell that Harrison Ford's got a love for the character more than he does for any other character that he plays, which is upsetting considering his Han Solo. But like he really loves Indiana Jones, and you can tell like through his voice performance, even though it's obviously modulated, and I know the few things that he did to do the CGI, like he's obviously present, and it's just like one of those fucking scenes where you're like, I wish this was the whole movie. If they had the technology and the budget to do it, I wish this was the whole movie. But it's like a mini movie in and of itself, and it's just fucking phenomenal. And yeah, I've actually watched that bit a few times, but not the entire movie since it's been released. I just rewatched the opening quite a few times. It's just amazing. I love it so much. It just, okay, it just reminds me of like the original three indie movies, and it just gets me so excited every time I watch it. Not in a naughty way though. Well, a little bit in a naughty way.
Yeah, I'm a big Indiana Jones fan, so I wasn't a huge fan of that film. I think some of the stuff they did towards the end I really didn't like, but that opening scene I can't slate it at all. I thought it was brilliant as well. And yeah, I wish that was the whole film, like set in that period again. It's young Indy fighting Nazis. It's just a winning formula. Like, my pick then for my last category is a movie you've already mentioned.
Is this the first one that you've mentioned? I don't think we've talked about we've not talked about any films on the same, have we?
Don't think so. I mean, we'll find out when we recap. We'll run through them when we finish.
Have you been writing them down?
No, I'm a fuck. I just expect you to read yours out and then I'll read mine.
Fair enough.
No, it's a film you have mentioned though. You had it in a different category. And this is probably my favourite film of 2023, despite the fact I watched it in 2024. And that is The Iron Claw.
Yeah.
And the fist pump moment for me is when Kerry Von Erich joins his brothers in the ring for the first time, and we get that montage of them just traveling the country and just fucking wrecking shit.
I was literally just about to say, do you want to do a last minute category that I've just thought of, and it's going to be best needle drop, but I was literally going to repeat myself with Iron
Claw. Yeah, the exact one. That's incredible. Like, just it starts when Mike puts the record on and Kerry turns, and then it transitions into the Von Erichs coming into the ring with literally the music playing. And then you get that montage of them fighting the Fabulous Freebirds and touring the country and just like living the life, like just becoming stars in the ring, having all these fans like adoring them. The partying when they were like on the bus doing like the arm wrestlers with like some of the big wrestlers there. The shit in the like the bars and stuff when like David like gets pissed and he falls off the bar and they're just getting like hammered. Like just that entire bit where the family just, it's that highest of highs before what eventually follows. But just that moment, starting with Kerry just turning and reckoning, like just when he hears the music and you can just see it in his eyes, like there's something there. And then the way it goes from there, I just think it's fucking absolutely incredible. It's a scene that I could watch over and over.
All to Tom Sawyer, the song Tom Sawyer, which is always one of the best fucking songs.
Yeah. I think it's just incredible. Absolutely incredible. It's one of my favourite moments in the entire film because there's not many moments to enjoy after that. But yeah, I think...
No, you're right about that.
Yeah, I think it's just a really exhilarating scene to watch. And it shows you, like, these guys were really at the top of the world. And that is what the Von Erichs were. Like, obviously, I wasn't around at the time, but you listen to any wrestling historian or read anything about it, and they were, like, in terms of wrestling, they were, like, some of the biggest people on the planet for a while. And obviously, what happened afterwards is tragic. But for that time, they were probably as content as anyone can be. And it captures that wonderfully, I think. And it's just awesome to watch.
Yeah, I think if I... Because I didn't know the story going in. If I hadn't spoke... If you'd have just said... watch it, just watch it and not said like, you're going to be fucking broken like you did. And then our friend Josh, who was like, it fucking broke me just before I watched it. I probably would have watched that scene and go, we fucking go, we're in for some fucking big shit now.
Yeah.
It would have probably knocked me for six a lot more. But yeah, what a fucking scene. It's so exhilarating. Is like, it fucking gets your chest going. Like, you just fucking, the music, the montage, the everything about it is perfect. Like I said, last minute wanted to do like a needle drop, but you already fucking picked probably the best one of the year anyway. So
yeah, I think it's incredible. It's my favorite film of the year.
Because they literally watched the needle drop as well. It's phenomenal.
Those guys not getting nominated for anything.
Yeah.
Not a single category is an absolute outrage. But yeah, it's my favorite film of 2024. So I had to get it in some category, and this one felt perfect, I think.
Yeah. Such a good film.
It is. It's brilliant. So that's it then. That brings our categories to an end. The Cinemax, I can't remember the name I gave at the beginning. The Cinemax Alternative Oscars Awards is wrapped. We've got our awards. We'll run through then what we have. So I think I've got mine written down, although some of them I think I changed on the fly going through it. So starting with Breakthrough, I had Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Zac Efron, a minor star.
Yeah, in The Iron Claw. Someone who no one was really aware of heading into it.
No.
In The Best Rookie, I had Milo Mikado Grainer in Anatomy of a Fall.
Nicholas Cantu, Bradley Noon, Mike Abbey, and Sherman Brown Jr. as the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I can't believe, by the way, this kid I've got.
Doing it like this is really highlighting how serious you take it. Unserious, I don't.
Hey, some of them I haven't. Like, fucking Evil Dead Rise wasn't that serious.
Yeah, true.
Best Veteran, Big Bobby D in Killers of the Flower Moon again, my goat.
Then Danny Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. Debut, I had Celine Song directing Past Lives. I thought it was incredible. You didn't have one. No. Best Stunt Work, no, I had... You are?
I got no taste.
No. Best Stunt Work, I had Mr. Cruise flying off that fucking hill, essentially, on his motorbike, parachuting down.
I had the John Wick stunt team, specifically Keanu Reeves' stunt team of Bruce Conception, Jeremy Marinus, Dave Camarillo, and Lee Kang.
Best animated voice actor, like voice performance, I had Oscar Isaac as Miguel O'Hara in Spider-Verse.
Jet Black as Bowser.
Best adaption, I had Oh There God It's Me Margaret for the decision to include more of Rachel McAdams' character.
Yes, and I rolled over Dungeons and Dragons.
Best fist bump, the final one, I had the scene when the Von Erichs fuck shit up and become huge.
And I had Indiana Jones fucking acting like a boss.
Yeah, some good stuff there. Some very good winners, I'd say. Very deserving winners.
Yeah, the awards are in the mail.
I tell you what, I might give them these ones.
Which one was that? What did I give you? Funniest.
Best journalist.
Oh, best journalist. Yeah.
Yeah. The funniest ones over there.
You need to put, you've got a space here underneath the Back to the Future. You need to put it up there. And then I can, every week when we come back, I'll just get it up and be like, yo, John, can you remember when?
What, the best funniest prom?
The funniest staff member award.
This bad boy here.
That's the one. Yeah.
That nailed there.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. Actually, it would work because it's very film-based.
Yeah, there you go. Funniest team member. Not that you can read that because it's backwards. Very well deserved. I tell you what, because we've done it now, one random question I've got for you, because I know you haven't watched too many of the best pictures at the Oscars, so I won't ask you to make any predictions.
I'm uncultured, you're right.
Yeah. But if you could add any movie... You're not
supposed to be fucking softly, yeah.
Yeah, that's it, we'll move on. If you can add any nominee to any category, do you have one? If there was anything you could nominate?
I don't actually know who's got best picture, like who's in best picture, but I'm just going to have a quick look. While I'm looking, I assume you have some.
Yeah, I've got one that I only thought of it a minute ago, which I decided to ask, and it's for the best original song.
Okay.
I'd add, do you know in The Iron Claw when they go to Mike's gig.
Yeah.
And they performs that song, and then it plays at the end. And I've listened to that song so many fucking times since, and it's called "Wanna Live Forever." I can't remember the name of the group that performed it. I mean, which is stupid because I've listened to it on Spotify like 100 times since I watched the movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that hasn't been nominated for a best original song, because I think it's fucking incredible.
Yeah, that's strange. Just a quick look at Best Picture. We know what I'm going to say. Godzilla should be in there. Like, I know it's Godzilla, and I know it's very unserious compared to a lot of the other movies, but it's the human side of it and how they portray Godzilla, the creature. Like, it's not your typical monster movie. I don't think it's not about the monster. It's about the destruction and the consequence of what the monster means. And
yeah.
I know it's very of me to say Godzilla at the moment. I don't know, it seems stupid, but I'm being 100% serious when I say that movie is not a monster movie in my eyes. It is a very, very serious movie. And all the cast, I think, definitely deserve it because they really, really put their all in.
Is that in Japanese?
Yeah.
I'm surprised that's not even been nominated for Best Animated. I mean, foreign feature then.
Yeah. It's a strange one.
Well, that's a shame.
But
we've got some...
Peaches not being on Best Original Song. What the fuck's all that?
Have you seen Ryan Gosling's performing that song at the Oscars?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's going to be interesting. Are you going to be watching it live?
I think so. I think Bernie's asked me if I want to go around to his.
That's so cool.
So I booked the Monday morning off work. I'm working the evening instead. So yeah, I think so. But I don't think we understand how long it's going to be. So if we fucking make it to the end, we'll see.
Is Bernie just watching it just because he wants to see Leo win an Oscar?
Well, Leo's not even nominated. No, Leo didn't get nominated.
Fucking bothered for then.
I know. Martin Scorsese got nominated, so there's that. But Leo didn't, and I think Bernie's still upset about that. So that brings our Oscars special to an end. Episode, I thought.
If we call it a season, our first season as well.
Yeah. So this is the final episode for a while. Don't miss us too much. But life's just getting in the way.
Yeah.
Next few months about to be busy as fook. So
you got to concentrate on your uni. You're in your last year.
I know.
Focus. Even though you were going to come out of it with a job in the thing that you want to do.
Yeah, I've already got the job. It's just pissing about. It's all formalities now. We will be reconvening in the future. Not too distant future. Just once got everything in order and life's not fucking going 100 miles an hour. But we hope you guys enjoyed this final episode of the first season, technically. I don't know if we're going to call them seasons because that's going to be a lot of work. But the final episode...
I lose we'll call the podcast a season.
But it's the final episode of this first run. And I think the Oscars was a good time to jump off anyway. It's the end of like the awards race. It's like where a lot of like the movie year kind of ends anyway. So it's a good place to call it a day for a while. But we will be back soon. So if you guys enjoyed this, feel free to subscribe to the channel on YouTube if you are watching. If you're listening on any of the podcast services, then feel free to subscribe to the channel on there, as well as leaving a nice review. Our details are underneath if you want to see what we get up to while we're not around, because it's going to be a few months, I think, or at least a couple of months. But we will be back, and we've already got ideas from our back, so we will definitely be back. But thanks for watching. We hope you guys enjoy the Oscars. It's not going to be as good as our awards, but give them a chance. Do you know what I mean? Just give them a chance. But yeah, thanks for watching, guys, and we shall see you not soon.
Soon, but not soon. Not too soon.
Yeah. Not too long, but not too soon. Yeah. We'll see you when we see you.
Next time you see me, I'll have watched every Godzilla movie, probably.
And I'll be completely grey by then.
You can't see them on these cameras, but I am gone full. Like, these are proper grey now.
Are they?
Proper coming through.
Fucking rough, innit?
I'm worried to get a haircut because they are going to come back thicker and stronger, I bet you.
Yeah, that's what happens with mine. Mine's usually on the top, which you can't see now, but It used to go when I had my haircut, and now they're still there when I get it cut.
You know, the difference is, Cal, I'm 10 years older than you. You shouldn't be getting the greys like I do.
I don't like to say you're old, but you're not 10 years old, are you?
How old are you? Right. No, you are. How old are you?
28.
Oh, no, you're not. I'm like, okay. I don't know, for some reason, I thought you were 25.
I'll take that. I wish I was.
Fair enough.
But yeah, that brings us this to an end then, guys. We shall see you in the future. And we hope you enjoyed this final episode for now. And we hope you're still here when we get back.
Hopefully.
Peace out.
See you soon.